You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Mastoli to throw right away, and going deep, and up Pattern and making the catch, and a beauty, Jalen Saunders. Second and two. Play action. Oh, what a catch! Rashad Lawrence. Say hello to the highlight reel. Masoli. Over the top. Touchdown. Jalen Saunders. Hang on here. We've got to finish.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Oh, Mike. Another week, and we have to sit here and talk about another disappointing loss for our Hamilton Tiger Cats. This time they fell to the Ottawa Redblacks 21-15. They've now lost three straight after starting the season 2-1. They're now obviously 2-4. The defense doesn't allow a touchdown in this game, and yet they still lose. They have now lost their last two at home. What the hell, man?
I don't know what to say about this one, Josh. I mean, what a frustrating game to watch. I'm sure it must have been even more frustrating in the stands watching this game because I was losing my mind watching on TV. I mean, it's so, you know, they lose those two games against the Riders, and those were frustrating to watch. But this one, I think, takes the cake.
I think it has to, and it's the loss comes from the same stuff we've been harping on all year. Red zone futility, man. I think they got in the red zone two or three times in this game and didn't score touchdowns. The first drive of this game, Mazzoli's out there slinging it. They're going wide side of the field. They're going short side of the field. He's hitting everyone on the outside. He's picking apart the Red Blacks defense. Then they get inside the 20-yard line. I think they're even inside the 10-yard line. And all of a sudden, they don't know how to move the ball. It's just, I was sitting in the stands, obviously, at the game because season ticket holder, with a buddy of mine. And we were joking, like, is there different playbooks? Like, is there a yellow playbook for the rest of the field, and then they pull out the red playbook for the red zone, and it's these completely different plays that just don't work. Like, I don't understand how this team can march up and down the field at will, get into the red zone, and all of a sudden they're just derping all over the place. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, and it's different in the CFL compared to the NFL, the red zone, because the CFL's end zones are 20 yards deep. So I don't see why they feel it necessary to change up the playbook when they get that close, because you can still throw the ball. If you're at the 10-yard line, you still have 30 yards to work with. So, yeah, it's beyond frustrating that they can move the ball, rack up yards in between the 20s, but once they get into that dreaded red zone, they can't move the ball. They need to start scoring touchdowns. That's just the bottom line. They held a team to just field goals, 7,000 field goals or whatever it was, and they still lost. So, yeah, I mean, if we want to win games, we got to put sevens up on the board,
That's the bottom line because Mike Graham said so. Is that how it's going to go?
That's how it goes, buddy.
I love it. I'm the bald one, but you're stone cold. I love it.
Yes.
The first drive, like I said, they picked him apart. They get in the red zone. They run it once. They get like 6 or 7 yards on that run. And then they throw it on the next down. He throws it out of the back of the end zone. Like, Mike Jones made the catch, but it was too far. It's like, you mentioned how they have all this room, and they still don't use it correctly. It's so frustrating. It's been this way since pretty much – it's been this way since you and I sat here and was like, they're 4-for-4 in the red zone. And since then, I think they're like 2-for-10 or like 2-for-12. Like, it's just gone completely downhill. And for a defense, like you said, that only allowed – it was 7 field goals, not 7,000, although it felt like 7,000 field goals. But they only allow field goals. They're stuffing – like, Ottawa's got a great offense. They got talent up the wazoo. And the defense was shutting them down pretty much the entire game. It's almost unfathomable to think that they lost a game where they actually scored a touchdown. It was late, but they scored a touchdown, and the other team didn't. It's like that's not the CFL we're used to now, is it?
No, not at all. And I'm just looking at like the overall stats for this team. They're second in passing yards. They are fifth in rushing yards, which is not spectacular, but
it's middle of the pack.
Yeah, it's middle of the pack, and then they're sixth in total points. So, yeah, that's the story of the season so far. Moving, racking up the yards. They're second in time of possession. I mean, they just need to score. If they can just figure that out, the red zone production, to get seven points more often, we'll be fine. But, yeah, that's the downfall of this team so far this season.
They've lost, I would say, two games, this one and the first one against Saskatchewan. They lost two games in this season due to the inability to punch it in the red zone. They win those two games. We're sitting here talking about a 4-2 football team that's in first place in the division, and we're laughing. We're like, 4-2 after the first six games? Hell yeah. But it's like they just get there, and they just can't do it, and it bugs me so much.
Yeah, it's so maddening to watch a team march down the field and then come away with limited points, 3 points, a rouge in this game,
oh
a blocked
gosh.
Field goal, a missed field goal. It's, what's the point if you're not putting up touchdowns? What's the point? I mean, anyways.
But I'm glad you brought up the misses, because the missed opportunities in this, to me, is the other big storyline from this game. And they say football is a game where 3, 4, 5 plays can make the difference. Let's run off the missed opportunities that this team had in this game. They had two missed interceptions, one of which, I believe it was near the end of the first half, hit the defensive back right in the hands. Like, yeah. Greg Ellingson falls, Cariel Brooks is standing there, picks it off. That would have led to, I think they would have had the ball around the 30, 35-yard line. Worst case scenario, they're getting a field goal out of that to end the half. It's a different ball game. There was an earlier missed one where Richard Leonard had great coverage on, I believe it was the receiver, Harris. He knocks the ball. Mike Daly dies for it. It wasn't as easy an interception. The one that hit Brooks in the hands is like, for a team that is not creating turnovers, my God, you got to make those. Mazzoli throws an interception, which we're used to. I think, and the thing is, I said this to my buddy in the stands. I said, okay, well, we know he's going to throw a pick. At least he threw it early. And this is now six straight games where he's thrown an interception, which he's thrown more INTs this year than he did all of last year, which is incredible. But he's literally thrown one every game. So if he's going to throw one every game, okay, at least he got out of his system in the first quarter. Still not great, but hey, he's probably not going to throw anymore. He missed Jalen Saunders on a throw. He missed Mike Jones on a couple throws. Mike Jones dropped one that should have, if he would have hauled it in, he would have zoomed to the end zone.
Uh-huh.
Liram Hirelahu has two missed field goals. One was a block, but essentially two misses. In a game where they lose by 6 points, they got two instead of six there. We're talking about a 4-point difference. If this game's 21-19 on that final drive, they're not forcing to go to the end zone. They're setting up to kick a field goal to win the game. And then we have the last drive. First, they get on the very first play, he finds Jalen Saunders wide open, zigzags through the Red Blacks defense, and gets to like the 30-yard line. It's like, oh my God, like they had no time there. They get a big chunk here. This comes after the drive where they scored a touchdown. So it's like, okay, like they might actually do that. They pull this off. Holy smokes. Very next play, misses a wide open Rashad Lawrence on, I don't know how many yards he would have got, but he was wide open by 15 yards. He would have turned that up, got it probably within the 10-yard line, if not scored himself. Misses that, and then we get the last two plays of the game, and I think everyone who's listening to this watched it. Sack, sack, game over, and the Ticats lose again. It's just all of these things, you add them up, and it's like if any of these things don't go wrong, the Ticats would have won this game, and that's just the way the game goes. Right, Mike?
Well, I lost my damn mind when Jalen Saunders caught that ball, and like I thought he might get to the end zone. I mean, I was just waiting on something to cheer for in this game, and I was screaming at the top of my lungs, "Go, go, go!" If he would have made that, got to the end zone on that play, it would have been game over basically. But the two sacks at the end were so disappointing. I mean, I honestly, we had a legit shot at winning this game with seconds left on the clock, and I don't know what happened. I guess there was no one open on that very last play, but you got to throw that up, right? I mean, there's zeros left on the clock when they snap the ball. They knew that this was the last play of the game. I realized that Mazzoli didn't see anyone open, but you got to throw that up. What happened on that last play, though? Did you see the actual play? Because you were in the stands. It's hard for me. It looked like there was three receivers that didn't run to the end zone, and there was one guy that went deep. Did you see that? Because if that's the case, I don't know what the play call was. Like maybe they were thinking, you know, throw it short and lateral it to the end zone. But to me, you got to go. You got to toss it up and see what happens. The worst, you know, the worst case scenario is no one catches the ball, but – you know, two things could happen. You get a PI and boom, you're at the 1 yard line, or you catch the damn ball and it's a touchdown. So I don't know what was happening on that last play. You just got to get rid of it and you got to throw it deep.
The first sack, I was like, oh man, of course he took a sack, but I was thinking, okay, it's okay. Cause they get another play there. You get another opportunity. Why they rolled Mazzoli rolls out to the short side, roll out to the wide side. You have so much more room, and like you said, just throw it up, because the worst case scenario is no one catches it or gets intercepted and you lose the game anyway. But you know how you definitely lose the game? If you don't even get the pass off. Now, the rush got there quickly, but that's still, to me, no excuse. You heave it up in the end zone. I didn't notice that receivers didn't go to the end zone because it's tough when I'm watching the quarterback because that's where the ball is, and I'm just making sure he's got time. And then all of a sudden, before I could even look downfield, he's harassed and he's on the ground and the game's over. And it's like I just put my head down and shook my head, and it was just a completely other thing. But it's like you have to throw the ball up. Like no matter – like the Red Blacks did a Hail Mary at the end of the first half, and it very nearly was successful. It ended up a yard and a half short, but that's what you have to do. You get enough guys in there – and they only rushed, I think, three. It was a three-man rush that beat five men, and two of them got to the quarterback. That's inexcusable as far as I'm concerned. And maybe it's Mazzoli holding on to the ball too long. Maybe you are right and guys didn't go to the end zone, or guys didn't get where they were supposed to be. But at some point, you just got to heave it up there. Even if you're throwing 1-on-5, throw the damn ball up in the air, because at least you're giving yourself a shot. What happened? There was no shot at all, and the game was over, and it was a loss.
It's just mind-boggling, those last two plays. I mean, And like you mentioned before, that pass that would have been an easy first down, you know, when he rolls out and he misses him. I mean, come on. Like, you got to make those plays. Got to make them. So, beyond disappointing, man. Beyond disappointing.
Okay, well, let's not be too negative, because even though it's a loss and it's the third straight and we are going to be a little bit negative later, let's talk about some of the things this game that went well. And I think we can I'm going to let you go first, and I think we're basically sticking on one side of the ball here for the most part. But there was some good stuff in this game on both sides of the ball, if we can talk about certain players. But where would you like to kick off your things you liked about the game, Mike?
Well, I want to talk about Jalen Saunders.
Beast.
I mean, amazing. This guy was awesome all game. It seemed like he was the only receiver out there at times. Now, I know Banks had big numbers. Mike Jones had some catches. Mike Jones was targeted a lot in this game.
He really was.
Like, he was the only guy getting open? Like, I don't – maybe they just – the defense kind of, you know, didn't put the emphasis on him because he's obviously the youngest receiver. Yeah, exactly. I was trying to be nice there, but right. But Jalen Saunders, man. I mean, this guy is an amazing receiver. He really is. He's a superstar in the making, because at this point in time, he might be the best receiver on the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Mike, there's no doubt about it in my mind. He is the best receiver on this team, and I think he's the most underrated player in the league. No one talks about him. No one talks about him. I want to say he's third in the league in receiving yards after finishing in the top five last year, and he didn't get a sniff of all-star consideration. This guy is a beast. He is the best receiver on this team, and I don't think it's even close. And I like that. Tasker's great. Tolliver's great. Chris Williams is back, and I think that as soon as he gets into this, I think he's going to be a lot better. Banks is a great receiver. I think Saunders is better than them all right now.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I mean, he came to play this game, 8 receptions, 154 yards, 19.2-yard average, a long of 50, and that touchdown at the end, which they made look easy on that drive. And I was like,
oh, my God. Where was that the rest of the game? They picked – very first drive of the game, they're picking them apart and they bog down the red zone. And then when they need to make a play, it's just like pass, catch, touchdown. It was like it took like, what, 30 seconds and like maybe, what, four plays? And it was like, well, where the hell has this been for the last 58 minutes?
I know. It's just I can't understand it. But a hell of a game from Saunders. You know, he makes that bandana look, the, you know, that.
My
you
friend
know,
asked if he had a rat tail.
That's good. But he makes Bo Levi Mitchell's look, you know, he's way cooler on Saunders, right? Way cool. But yeah, I mean, going forward, you got to think that defenses have got to pay more attention to Jalen Saunders because this guy is the real deal.
Which is just going to make everyone else in that offense, in the receiving core, that much more effective because, okay, yep, we got to shade to Saunders. Like, that's the beauty about this receiving core. And, like, I don't want to overstate it, but if you can get those five American guys out there, that is like, who do you leave open? Who do you just ignore? Because even if you ignore the guy that's on the wide side of the field, Mazzoli can make that throw if need be. And if you got a guy like Terrence Tolliver or even a guy like Chris Williams out there, well, you throw it up. Chris Williams, he's got the speed to go get it. Terrence Tolliver's got the height to go win a jump ball. Like, I know it's probably not going to happen a ton because of the ratio, but if you can ever get all five of those guys out there, I feel sorry for the defense that tries to cover them all.
Yeah, it's a scary situation there. And I'm hoping with the Tasker and Tolliver coming back, the red zone production will increase because I feel like Saunders, Banks are kind of guys that Williams are kind of guys that, you know, you can stretch the field with. But once you get to the red zone, it's kind of harder to use them. Mm-hmm. But with a guy like Tasker, more of a possession receiver, Tolliver, a tall receiver. I've got my fingers crossed that these guys will be the saviors of the Ticats offense to put up these touchdowns that we need.
Yeah, to exchange those threes for sevens, like you said earlier. Yeah. We can't leave Saunders, though, without talking about that stupid penalty he took after the interception. The penalty was called, and again, it was on the other side of the field from where I sit. It's tough to see. I watched it again, and I was like, when I got home, because people were tweeting about it, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's not good. When I rewatched the game to prep for our show this week, buddy, I watched it, I was like, okay, it's dumb, and you do not make that play, but it's not as bad. People were comparing it to the Dylan Wynn hit on CJ Gable. And that, to me, it's and I know I'm sure we're going to get criticized for this song. Well, you're only saying this because it's a Ticats guy. It looked more to me like he led with his shoulder than he did. But at the same time, you don't do that. And we're trying to get that crap out of the game. And he does hit him in the head, but he goes with the shoulder. And it's not – he didn't, you know, arms down to the side and spear him, you know, like Dylan Wynn from the Argos. But it's still – that's just – you. Look, it's bad enough you threw the interception, but with the way the defense played in this game, they got that – Ottawa would have had to, what, like the 10-yard line? That's a possibility for a quick two and out, and maybe, okay, we're taking the safety at this point. There's two more points on the board, completely changes the complexion of the game. You just can't take that penalty in that situation. I think that's all there is to it.
Yeah, I totally agree. It wasn't as malicious as the win hit, but it completely unnecessary, and – that's another thing we'll get into is the penalties in this game were just not good for the Ticats. And if you know, the defense was playing well. So you're right. If you pin him deep, you know, something could happen. The turnover won't happen. God forbid we get the turnover. I mean, two turnovers so far this season for the Ticats. They just that has to improve. But Saunders, great game, but you can't take that penalty, man.
Let's talk about the defense because outside of Jalen Saunders, that's really the only other thing in this game that I think is worthy of praise. And worthy of praise might be an understatement because this defense really came to play. No touchdowns allowed, which we know. That's great. And it's not like Ottawa had a lot of yards. Trevor Harris, 23 of 35 for 228 yards. That's not a ton. Yes, there was Dominic Davis threw like the 50-yard Hail Mary that came up short. But Trevor Harris is the guy in Ottawa. That's not a ton. Deontay Spencer, Greg Ellingson, almost no impact. Ellingson, three catches for 34 yards. Spencer had four for 18. If I'd have said, hey, Deontay Spencer's going to have under 20 and Greg Ellingson's going to have under 35, you're thinking the Ticats are going to win this game. William Powell, who we talked about last week, one of the reasons I said the Red Blacks would win this game. He had the one big play, the 50-yard reception in the fourth quarter, but 15 carries for 47 yards. The run defense for this team, we've talked about, has been a bit of an issue. And they came in this one against one of the best running backs in the league and essentially, I think, in all fairness, shut him completely down. He did have 61 yards through the air, like when the 50-yarder, like I mentioned, but Powell wasn't much of a factor in this one either. Brad Sinopoli was really the only Red Blacks offensive player to have a solid game. He had 9 catches for 82 yards, but you look at the numbers that the Red Blacks put up on offense, including the no touchdowns, so the Ticats defense did not allow them into the end zone. You think of that before the game, you go, you're going to win this football game. You know what I mean? Like that was a stellar defensive performance. And this defense has been the best part of this team the entire season, I think.
Yeah, and that's the only thing this defense is missing, the turnovers.
The turnovers, yep.
They're, you know, stats-wise, they're at the top of the league in many stats defensively. They do a good job. Like you said, they held one of the best running backs in the league. And in our game preview last week, I was worried that William Powell would have his way with this run defense, and they seemed to really improve that from last week's game against the Riders or the week before against the Riders. I mean, that's what really hurt us. Those runs up the middle with, you know, especially with Thigpen, just it killed us. But I was really impressed with how this team performed on defense. So, you know, they held the Red Blacks only seven field goals, no touchdowns. I mean, they did a really good job. They needed some help from the offense, and they just didn't get it.
I want to talk about the secondary for a second here, because I think that's a group that was much maligned. Do you remember when they traded Abdul Kanne just after training camp, and everyone was like, what a horrible move, the secondary's going to stink? And no one knew they were going to get Delvin Bro back, and obviously that's made a change. But yeah. Jamal Roll made a lot of really nice plays in this game. Knocked down a potential touchdown pass to Greg Ellingson in the game. Richard Leonard, I feel like, has had a bit of a tough sophomore year. But that
I thought he had a good game. I thought he had a good game last week. Yeah.
But
yeah.
He's seeing the most action because he's the field halfback, and that's where most of the action goes. It's either that or they're not throwing to Delvin Bro's side. So that completely, no matter who they put on that short side of the field at wide receiver, they're not getting, like, quarterbacks aren't even looking there. Like, Delvin Bro's stats, I'm not even sure if he had one in this game. Like, he had one tackle. Like, that's essentially what he does. Like, they completely ignore Delvin Bro's side of the field. So that in and of itself is worth bringing him back. But the rest of the secondary, Mike Daly's looked pretty good at safety. But Roll was the guy in this game that I'm just like, it seemed like every time they Ottawa threw it deep, it was Roll making a knockdown, making a tackle in open space. Like, this secondary is pretty freaking good, Mike.
Yeah. And that was always the worry in past seasons. You know,
how many podcasts have we done where we sat here and said, well, I like the defense, but man, I'm worried about that secondary. I feel like that's been the theme of this show since we started.
It has been. And the constant rotation of different DBs in and out. We seem to have DBs that are set in stone right now. That, you know, they're going to be playing every week, and they've been doing a really good job. I want to talk about Simone Lawrence. I thought he was tremendous in this game. We have a good defensive coach in Jerry. If the offense ever wakes up, we'll have a really, really good team. And you look at the East right now, and there's not many good teams. Toronto looks like crap. Montreal is crap. With Johnny or no Johnny. Ottawa is questionable. I don't know what the hell they are. Okay, they beat us, but they didn't look that good doing it. So the East is still wide open. If we can just mesh these two, offense and defense, let's get it going, we'll be laughing. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's frustrating.
All right, let's talk about the things about this game we didn't like, Mike. And sadly, there are more of this than there is of the things we just talked about. So let's start with, you mentioned penalties earlier. Let's get that out of the way, because that was ugly.
Yeah, I mean, 11 penalties for 157 yards. That's just obviously way, way, way too many. That's the whole field plus some. So we're giving up so many penalties. We're shooting ourselves in the foot here. I mean, we talk about the defense, how well they've done. But you can't be taking silly penalties like that. And it wasn't just the defense. Obviously, the offense had penalties too. But if you're struggling offensively, you can't be giving up all those penalties. 11 for 157 yards, that's a lot of yards to be given up.
Yeah, I have a problem with one of the penalties called in this game, but that would still be 10 for 142 yards, even if you took away the Jamal Westerman roughing or unnecessary roughness call when he tackled Trevor Harris on a run. To me, was an absolute joke. I don't know what, like, was he trying to, like, eye gouge him? Because, like, when I saw it on the replay of the game, it's like he tackles him pretty hard, like twists him down, but that's fine. Harris is a runner at that point. He didn't go low. He didn't go high. He tackled him down, and he's holding on to him, and Harris is on top of Westerman, and then, like, a flag comes out. And I'm just like, I don't see the penalty there. I really, really don't. And that's not negating the rest of them, probably pretty well earned, but I saw that one, and I'm just like, if this is a penalty, then I don't know what sport I'm watching, because that just felt like football to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally agree. I was pretty upset when that penalty was called. So, you know, Jamal Westerman comes in. He's the new guy. And unfortunately, I think he got hosed on that call.
Speaking of hose, maybe that's not the right way to segue this, but I try to segue our topics into one another. Man, why is this team just not running the football? Like, my buddy in the stands, and I've mentioned him now, it's like four or five times, he's the secret third man of our show, mentioned one of his favorite things about our show is you doing the half splits between this is how many times they ran the ball and this is how many times they passed the ball. Look what they did in the first half and look what they didn't do in the second half. And in this game, we can't even do that because they ran the ball 11 freaking times in this game, and I don't think they called a run like – for a whole quarter. Like, it just felt like they didn't abandon the running game. They just completely forgot it existed. It was awful.
Yeah, it was like a Ken Austin flashback there.
Oh,
I mean,
my God.
The first drive of the game, they came out guns ablaze and tossing the ball, and I have no problem with that. You know, they are moving the ball effectively. I think it's probably their best drive, except that last drive for the touchdown. But I was going to do the first half, second half, but there's no need because usually the first half they run it quite a bit and then they tail off in the second half. And I like to emphasize that, you know, why didn't you keep running it? We're still in this game. They need a balanced attack because if they're just passing it, it's so obvious. I mean, it's hard to fool a defense when they know what you're going to do every down. So 11 rushes is just simply not enough. They need this balanced attack. They need to run the ball. And I think June Jones knows that. In a post-game interviews, he said he took the blame for it. You know, he should have ran the ball more. He knows it. So I'm hoping that in future games, he considers that because Mazzoli can't be tossing the ball 50, 60 times a game. They need to hand off. And they have so much talent, you know, at the running back position. Canadians and Americans, John White, Alex Green's coming back, Nikita Whitlock, Mercer Timmis, you know, the list goes on. So 11 rushes, not good enough.
Well, here's the thing I don't understand. They ran the ball, the first time they ran the ball, 6 yards. Second time they ran the ball, 6 yards. Third time they ran the ball, 6 yards. If you're picking up 6 yards a carry, that's pretty damn good. They had 31 total rushing yards in this game, and 18 of them came on the first three runs of the game. Like, why did they stop trying to run the ball? Because on second and three, if you run the ball and you're picking up 6 yards a carry, you get a first down. Like, you mentioned they have to mix the pass and the run. Like, they have to have a more balanced attack. And we're not saying 50-50. I think that's ludicrous. I'm not even going to go so – like, 70-30 or 65-35, I think what we've seen – since June Jones took over this team is that when they mix the run and the pass, that's when they're the most successful. We saw it last year. We saw it this year. I don't understand why. And again, we know when Ken Austin was here, they would run the ball, they'd get a half yard and he'd say, screw it. We're throwing the rest of the game essentially. And I know that that's hyperbole, but go with me here. They were having success running the football early. And then after the first quarter ended, it was like, well, we're not running anymore. We're just going to throw. And I just don't understand why that was the case.
And, you know, you go back to the game last week, Chris Jones' defense, they were rushing three a lot. And I think they did the same thing. You know, Ottawa did the same thing in this game. They dropped back, you know, if not three, they're rushing four. They drop back eight. They drop back nine. You need to take advantage of that. I mean, there's six offensive linemen in most of the packages for the Ticats. Six on three, run the ball. See what you can get and, you know, move to the next down. It's just, I think defenses are really starting to, you know, figure out this June Jones offense, and we have to counterpunch. We have to switch it up a bit and, you know, surprise these defenses because they know what's coming.
Yeah, that's the worry that I started to have. It's one of those things that people whispers. We heard it last year, like, you know, his offense is pretty simplistic, and once defenses get a read on it, will they be able, like, these coaches, guys like Chris Jones, guys like Noel Thorpe, will they, who are great defensive coordinators, will they get a read on this and be able to stop it? And the last 3 weeks, what we've seen is they've gotten a read on it. They've been able to stop it. So you're right. They need to some stuff up.
Yeah, and the delayed blitz has really killed them. Yeah. I mean, the Ottawa did a lot of delayed blitzes that the six-man front just got confused. They couldn't handle it. And I'm, you know, five sacks allowed. They've given away so many pieces on the offensive line. And yes, I know that they feel like they have the talent there, that they can plug in guys that don't really have that much experience. But this first game where they trade away Tony Washington and they don't have Landon Rice anymore, that's six offensive linemen, and they give up five sacks, that worries me a bit, Josh. That worries me.
See, now Jones himself said that he only thought that one of those sacks was the fault of the offensive line. I don't know how true that is. He's got different film than we get to see. We get to see the broadcast tape, right? But I did notice on a couple of them, it felt like Mazzoli held the ball too long. I'm not going to say all five. I'm not going to say it was one of five. I'm not going to say anything like that. But it did feel to me like on a couple, like you mentioned delayed blitz. Delayed blitzes only work when you're holding, like if you get the ball out of your hands, the delayed blitz means absolutely nothing. So a couple of them to me felt like Mazzoli just not getting rid of the ball. And then there was, you know, there's been talk that was because the receivers were doing their own thing and not running the plays that they were supposed to run. The whole thing was everyone was doing too much. Mazzoli was doing too much. The receivers were doing too much to try to make the big play or whatever. And maybe that's more fun. Maybe if they stuck to the game plan and everyone kind of stuck to what they're doing, maybe this wouldn't be the case. And maybe Luke Tasker, missing him is a reason for this, because Luke Tasker,
I think, is huge.
He's the outlet man, right? Like, he's what Andy Fantuz used to be to Zach Caleros. Like, you just know, okay, I don't see anyone open. We're 17. I'm just going to throw it to him. It's going to pick up, you know, 6 to 8 to 10 yards, and we're going to be okay.
And he knows how to get those first downs. You know,
he does. God knows for it.
8 yards away, and he catches a five-yard pass. He's not going to beat you with blazing speed, but somehow
he'll make you miss
it. He'll will his way. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I think him not being in the lineup is a huge loss for the Ticats.
So can we talk about the onside kick? Because this is something.
Yes.
This is tough, right? Like, this is, you know me, I tell you all the time, I love when teams are aggressive. I like when teams go for the win. You score a touchdown late, a 2-point conversion can win you the game. If a coach goes for it, I'm all for it. I've said that numerous times. I like teams that play to win, not that play not to lose. I didn't like this call, though. This is one of those instances where they were down by three. They scored the touchdown. They got a kickoff. I think there was, what, maybe a minute and a half to 2 minutes left in the game. And it's the way the defense was playing. I just feel like you kick it long. You get that two and out. You don't, because they kicked it short. The Red Blacks got a first down. They gave up a field goal. Now the Ticats are driving for a touchdown to win the game. I feel like you kick it long. You get your defense out there. They do the, even if the exact same thing happens, Ottawa picks up a first down, and then that was it. They shut them down. They're punting, not kicking a field goal. And so then the Ticats are getting the ball maybe around the 30-yard line. They still have to march, but they have to march for a field goal to tie the game. I feel like that would have been the better play. I'm not a coach. I'm just saying that's what I think that I would have done. What about you? Yeah, where do you stand on this?
I totally agree. You know, when I was running the Podsky account on Twitter, I mentioned, like, I would have kicked that deep. And like you, I am not a coach. That's not my specialty. But listen, this is a CFL, okay? It was close to 2 minutes left in the game.
That's a million. That's so much time.
Exactly. You kick that deep. Even if you don't get a two out now, maybe they get a first down. You still have time. If you work the clock right, you call a timeout, whatever. But to me, kicking it short is just trying to go for that onside kick. If there's like a minute left or less, totally go for it. When there's close to 2 minutes, you kick that deep and you rely on your defense, which has been playing very well the whole game. So, you know, trust in your defense, kick it deep, and you get the ball back. You're down by three. You're not down by six. You don't have to score a touchdown. So Yeah, I totally agree. Kick it deep and let your D do the thing.
Well, and that's just it. I think it's because of how the defense was playing. That in the moment, I said to my – like, you know, they go out there for the onside kick. Ottawa's not expecting it. They call a timeout, and I'm thinking – and me and my buddy are talking. We're thinking, okay, maybe that was what they did. They wanted to – because you get one timeout after a three-minute warning. They just made Ottawa burn theirs. Maybe that's the plan, and then they go out to kick the onside kick, and I'm just like, I don't know, man. There's still a lot of time left in this game. And because the defense was playing well – this game was like 40-37 at the time, and everyone was just – they were just marching up and down the field. Then I could sort of understand it because it's like, look – we don't have any – like, and this is not what they would be saying, but this is probably what they're thinking. Look, they've scored 40 on us. We don't have faith in our defense to get a stop here. They haven't been able to do it all game. Let's see if we can steal this ball here. I would understand it. But the defense was playing out of its mind great. They wouldn't have surrendered any points. And if they do, kudos to Ottawa for finding a break and making a play. I understand that. But with the way the defense is playing, I think you got to trust them. You got to trust that they would go out there, get a quick stop, whether it's a two and out or whether it's they picked up a first down and then got a two, like whatever it is, you got to trust with the way your defense was playing, they were going to get that. You were going to get the ball back without surrendering any points. And then it gets game on. Now the Ticats are down by three with the ball, with the same amount of time left. Mazzoli's in that situation. Even if he takes the first sack, well, then you just march the defense. You march the – because I think he got sacked and it was 36-yard line. So now you're kicking, what, a 43-yard field goal? Now, I know Hira Lahu had his problems during the game, but 10 seconds left, 43-yard field goal. You send your high-priced kicker out there to tie the game. You send it to overtime. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I would have played it, but that's not what happened. I don't – like I said, I love teams being aggressive. I just think this was the wrong time to do it.
Yeah, so do I. Like, I love when teams go for it on third down, even if it's like – third down at three, third down and four. I think teams should do that more often. But in a situation like this, when there's so little time left and you have an opportunity, you know, to kick it deep and rely on the defense, I think you take that. Because the onside kick, the percentages are so small on getting it back, and then they have such good field position. That was not a good coaching decision, in my opinion.
Okay, let's do something we haven't done in a few weeks, Mike. We got a Podski Player of the Week to name this week, and why don't you tell everyone who our pick is for this week's game?
Well, there's not many options out there, and the last couple of weeks you said it's been tough to pick a guy because he was just so disappointing, but you got to go with Jalen Saunders. This guy was the bright spot in a very cloudy day for the Tiger Cats. 8 receptions, 154 yards, a touchdown, a long of 50 yards. This kid is amazing, and he is our Podski Player of the Week this week.
Absolutely. All right, Mike, let's talk some Ticats news. Team made some roster moves this week. They signed quarterback Brian Moniz, or re-signed him, brought him back after they cut him in training camp. They needed a quarterback after they traded Johnny Manziel, so Moniz came back. He was a third-string guy. And they added a couple of American rookies in I don't want to get this guy's name wrong. It is international offensive lineman Isom Fashan, which is a dope name, and they also signed international wide receiver Cameron Eccles Looper to make room for him on the practice roster. They released international defensive end Jamal Marcus. Fashan was with the Argos in training camp and has spent some time with the Dolphins, Bills, and Vikings of the NFL. And Eccles Looper was with Indianapolis at their rookie camp this year, and he's 23. I think Fashan is something like 27. So, you know, the team's still searching for talent, bringing an offensive lineman because with the trade of Tony Washington and then bringing Avery Jordan up to the active roster, they want that developmental American player. So maybe we'll see this guy at some point this year. And I know this team's got a plethora of receivers, but it's never good to have it's never bad to have more, isn't it?
No, you get as much talent as you can on this team. Well, I like that name too, the second guy, old Looper, or Loopy. I call him Loopy. But yeah, it's, you know, the search never ends for talent. You know, even when you feel like you're kind of set, you're not. Yeah, the future is coming and you got to get new guys in here. So hopefully down the road, these guys will be able to contribute for the Ticats.
So Monday, we don't normally talk about practice news, but there were some interesting developments on Monday at practice. Brandon Banks didn't practice Monday and apparently had a brace on his knee. And in rewatching the game, I'm sure you caught this live, but I didn't because I wasn't watching on TV. They were talking about how he was hobbling around a little bit. So that's something I think that's worth monitoring. I think the addition of Chris Williams, as good as Brandon Banks is, I think him and Williams, very similar skill sets. I think that's fair to say. So losing Banks, which sucks because I think he's been excellent again this year. I think he's finally shed the label of return guy playing receiver, and he's strictly a receiver now, and I think he does a really good job at that. But I think the big news, the one that everyone's going to be happy about, Luke Tasker and Terrence Tolliver are back at practice on Monday. So hopefully both those guys will be back in the lineup, and that'll just make this offense that much better when they play the Owls on Friday.
Yeah, it should be also another thing that should be interesting to see is who are they going to go with at running back? I mean, you know, John White's there, Alex Green's coming back. There's so many options there, but you're right. I mean, Banks, that's unfortunate. They need to give him time, because it's not like we lack speed in this receiving core. I mean, come on. They still have Saunders and Chris Williams out there, and Mike Jones is a fast guy as well. But to get Tasker, especially Tasker, back is going to be huge for this offense. Mazzoli has a very good connection with Tasker. They feel each other. They know where they're going to be. So he will be huge for this team. And Tolliver as well. He's been good since coming back from his injury, and he adds that height in this receiving core. Hopefully those two guys can improve the red zone production.
your whole thing all this year is going to be red zone production, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. I'm sorry if I'm repetitive with that phrase, but until they improve the red zone production, I'm not going to stop talking about the red zone production.
I love it. So you touched on the running backs, and it's been a while since we've done fan questions, but one of the guys used to send him into us all the time, Adam, a guy I believe you met last year at a game out in Alberta. He yep. threw us a couple on Twitter, and I feel like, you know what, let's dig into some of the mailbag here, and let's answer some of his questions. And feel free, of course, anyone out there listening, throw us some questions. If we like them, we're going to use them on the show. And Adam always brings quality questions. So it's like, you know what, let's hit this running. You mentioned the running backs, and Adam sent us a question about the running backs. And he said, with Alex Green eligible to come off the sixth game and with John White struggling, who should be the starter against Montreal? Green, White, Timmis, or Sean Thomas Arlington? Mike, who do you think?
Oh, man, that's such a tough question. I think they'll use a rotation of guys. But you know what? I love John White, and he hasn't played terribly. But Alex Green really did well in this offense last year, and he's really familiar with this offense because of his history with June Jones. So I think they should go with Alex Green just because of his past production last year's. And he hasn't had a chance to show what he has this year so far. I'm putting Green in there. I love John White. I love all those other guys, and I wouldn't mind at all seeing, you know, a couple of them touch the ball, maybe mix it up a bit, anything to get this run game going again. But I'm going to go with Green if I had my choice.
Okay, well, I think you're a complete buffoon. Just because we need some excitement on this, man. When you and I disagree, we never make fun of each other. So I'm going to start that now. You're an idiot, right, and it's John White. Right. And here's why. I can't do it,
well,
man.
What's so impressive about John White, okay? what do you see?
Okay.
What have you seen from him that makes you, nipples hard?
I don't think the struggles of John White are John White's fault. I mentioned earlier, he had the first three carries of the game, 6 yards, 6 yards, 6 yards. Yeah, he's not busting off 20-yard runs. I get that, but they get away from the run game. He got, what, 8 carries in this game, I think? Yeah, 8 carries. And yes, he only had 25 yards, and as the game went on, it started to get worse. But would you ever place C.J. Gable in the lineup with any of these guys? Because the answer is no, simply because if he's not getting the ball, he can't really perform. 8 carries for a tailback is not enough. And yes, he hasn't been the John White that we remember from Edmonton, but he's been good, and I don't think he's done anything to – I'm sorry, I keep laughing at myself for the make your nipples hard comment. I can't get it out of my head. I don't think he's been the problem. I think the problem is recently they're just not running the damn football. Now, if they start Alex Green – I'm not going to be upset because I think let's see what he can do. And I understand you're coming from there, but I just don't think John White is the problem with the rushing attack.
No, I would agree with you on that. I mean,
So now are your nipples hard?
Yeah, my nipples are a little hard, but yeah, he hasn't gotten much of a chance. I think I'd like them to rotate some guys because we've seen that more often in football these days, right?
Keep them fresh.
Teams are going with a rotation. Yeah. And running back is such a physical position on the field. I mean, you're getting blasted every play you touch it, even if you don't touch it. I mean, that's one thing I like about John White. I saw him lay a beautiful block last game to protect Mazzoli. So that's part of his game, right? He's a bulldog. He will throw those blocks. He will do everything. So maybe Alex Green shouldn't start, but I'd like to see him thrown in there, maybe for some of the screen passes to him. He's a really fast guy. So is John White. John White has incredible speed as well, but maybe you get Alex Green in there to get him involved with the passing game, because I don't believe that he's a better blocker than John White.
Okay, so Adam's second question, given the offensive line's relatively poor performance on Saturday, who should the Ticats starting five be? Do you consider flipping Riker Matthews to left tackle, Brandon Revenberg to right tackle, and starting Matthew Girard? Mike, what do you say?
No flip-flopping on the offensive line. Keep how it was last week. They didn't have the greatest performance, but like you said earlier, it wasn't all on them. Mazzoli was holding the ball a little bit too long on some of those sacks. So just don't get flippy-floppy, okay? I don't want to see no flippy-floppy. Just keep the professional analyst right here.
No flippy-floppy.
Yeah, no flippy-floppy. So just keep it how it is. Let them mesh. And, just keep going forward with this crew, because they could be the starting five that leads this team into Success Town.
Success Town? That is fantastic. No flippy-floppy seems like it should be a shirt, doesn't it? Like,
yeah, it does. With flip-flop.
You put the Ghostbusters, you know, that no sign, and then just flip-flops or just write flippy-floppy in there. I don't know. Don't be surprised if that is not a shirt over at over at a merchandise store at shop.spreadshirt.ca/podskiwee, where you can find all your podskiwee merchandise. Okay, so I don't hate the idea of flipping the guys around simply because of the ratio flexibility that would give – they'd be starting four Canadian offensive linemen, and then you get your five American wide receivers on the field if you want to. But I'm inclined to give this group – the same one we saw on Saturday, at least another game before we start tinkering. I mentioned earlier, I don't think all the issues were offensive line related when it came to the sacks. The running game, I think maybe you could peg some of that on them. Avery Jordan, I think, had a fine game, and it was his first game. So, like, for me, I think I'm sticking with this group at least for now. And looking at the schedule, looking at what the Ticats have, I think if I'm making a change at any point, I think I'm waiting for a couple of weeks, because they play Montreal this week, and then they're at Winnipeg, and then they're on a bye before they hit a big stretch where they're playing Edmonton, and then it's, for crying out loud, then it's Labor Day already, and it's like, holy smokes. I think that bye week, if you're going to tinker with who's playing where, I think that's the week you make the change. But I think for the time being, I'm willing to give a mulligan. They weren't great, but they were still in the game, and that's the thing. Like, it's not like, oh my God, they gave up 10 sacks and they lost by 40. They lost by 6 points. And mistakes outside of the offensive line, I think, hurt more than what the offensive line didn't do in this game. So I'm inclined to give them at least one or two more games to see if this can get sorted out before I start flip-flopping. No flippy-floppy until I start flip-flopping guys around.
Exactly. And, you know, I was listening to Coach Sal interview, and Coach Sal, I'm a big fan of Coach Sal. He said that, you know, we're not going to – Avery Jordan was really good, so
I'll trust him.
Yeah, exactly. I trust his judgment. He always keeps an eye on the offensive line. That's one of his big things that he does, and that makes me very encouraged going forward with this young guy.
Okay, let's move on to talk about some CFL news, Mike. And the first thing we got to talk about is messed up. Jerome Messam was released by the Saskatchewan Roughriders on Monday. And they mentioned in their release that he was charged with a crime, so we're letting him go. And then that just, like, we got trickles of information. So Messam was charged with voyeurism?
I had to Google that when I saw it, by the way.
Yeah, I was like, I hear that. I'm like, okay, does that mean he's, like, climbing up trees like George McFly in Back to the Future? Like, is he a peeping Tom? Like, what's
what
going
a creepy
on
movie that was, though, if you think about when it. He goes back in time and it's like some incest story. But yeah, anyways, I digress.
Yeah.
It's very weird.
Again, we're not trying to make light of this, but that's like
– No.
What the hell is going on? It stemmed from an incident in 2016 where he allegedly filmed a consensual sexual encounter with his partner without her permission. This didn't go to the police until April when she filed the complaint. Messam was charged on Sunday. The CFL has issued a statement saying they will not register a contract with Messam until this whole thing is resolved. Messam says that he hopes to be found not guilty and resume his playing career. But, Mike, what a weird story this is.
Very strange. Like I said, I didn't even know what that word meant when I saw it. I was, what the hell did he get charged with? What is that? And obviously, right, like you said, it's no laughing matter. I don't even know what to say about it. Innocent till proven guilty. But it's not a good look for Mr. Messam or the, you know, I mean, the Rough Riders had nothing to do with this, obviously. But it's just unfortunate for them that he was on their team when this when the news came down.
No, it's creepy. And if he didn't do it, he didn't do it. If he did do it, I get it. With in the age of the cell phone and people, for some reason, I don't understand it, like to film themselves having sex. I don't get the appeal. I'm not a prude. I just don't understand it. So there's no – I know people who don't want to think about this, but don't worry. There are no sex tapes of me out there. Mike, I can't say the same thing about – can't say the same thing about Mike. I won't speak for him.
Well, maybe he's got some flutter. Sex to have a sex tape. I mean, I never – but anyway.
Oh, did your mother listen to this show? Is that why you're saying that?
God, no. So she wouldn't listen to this trash?
Yeah, don't worry. None of my family do either. But again, look, we're laughing here, but we're this is deadly serious. Like this is just wrong. It's plain wrong, and I don't want to get too in depth into some of the talk I've seen, but there are fans out there who are complete morons and saying this shouldn't be a crime and everyone does this. What's the big deal? I saw someone compare it to, well, they didn't cut Daron Carter for getting caught with weed, so they're being hypocrites. It's like, this is a serious, serious allegation, and if proven true, Jerome Messam's probably going to do jail time. And like, I don't know, man. It's a weird, disturbing, creepy story. And it's indefensible. If he did this, it's indefensible. You come on, man. Like, what do you just ask? And if they say no, then you know, put your camera down. Like, I don't know. That's the creepy part of it to me. Like, it's just icky. It's just icky. And to people be defending him, it's like you're. Give your head a shake.
I know, and to compare it to the Daron Carter situation.
Idiocy.
The Daron Carter situation, there's no victims in that crime, right? Nope. I mean, in this one, there's a victim that, you know, was filmed without their consent in a very intimate position. So, yeah, I mean, if it's true, the team was right to cut him, and that's all I can say about it. It's just a terrible thing.
Yeah, let's move on. Let's leave the – I'm sure Piffle's Pod, they're going to touch on this on their show this week, and I look forward to hearing what those guys and gals – especially the gal. Especially I want to hear what the girl has to say about this, because I feel like this is an issue where we need to hear from women, to be perfectly. We're two dudes, and we would not be
– I mean, I'd be upset if that happened to me.
Oh, like, for sure.
I'm a dude.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't like when people take my picture without me knowing it when I'm at like a – when I'm out and about, it's like, we live in a time when it's just so accessible to videotape and to photograph people. I don't like it. I'm not doing anything wrong, but I don't like the idea that at any point someone can just snap a photo of me or take a video of me and share it with someone. It makes me feel uncomfortable.
Exactly.
So let's move on. Let's talk a couple of trades. We had a lot of trade talk last week, and then we did the show, and then it's like, was there some sort of unknown trade deadline in the CFL this past week? Because as soon as we finished our show that night, the Toronto Argonauts went and traded Sean Lemon to the BC Lions for essentially a bag of air. It's like it's possibly a Negless player. It's possibly quote unquote future considerations. And then just, I think it was either Monday or Sunday, the Alouettes made another trade dealing Ryan Bombin, who the Ticats traded to Montreal back in May for the first overall pick, essentially, to the Argos for TJ Heath. It's like, which one of these moves kind of took you by surprise the most? Like, I think they're both pretty surprising, but it's just like, they just happen. It's like, we don't usually see trades like this all that often.
No, not at all. I can't remember a season where you saw, you know, so many high-profile trades happen. But, you know, I was surprised with the Bombin trade, honestly. I know that they are going to need some help on the offensive line, but, you know, the Alouettes traded for him this season, and he's a solid player that's also a Canadian. So to see him moved again was very surprising to me. But the Argonauts got better on the offensive line, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think that's a win for the Argos. I don't know if there's a defensive back in this league, maybe outside of Delvin Bro, that's an American that I would trade for a Canadian offensive lineman or a Canadian any position. Like, you win. And I know the Owls have a stockpile of young Canadian offensive linemen. I don't know, man. I just don't think that you trade a DB for a Canadian offensive lineman at any time. And Sean Lemon, like, this dude's becoming the defensive Kevin Glenn. He's now been on 7 of the 9 CFL teams, and the only ones he's got missing are the Montreal Alouettes and our Hamilton Tiger Cats. And I'm not a huge Sean Lemon fan. I feel like he's a little bit obnoxious. He's one of those guys, I think, if he's on your team, you're like, oh, I like him. He's fun, blah, blah, blah. But if he's against you, you're kind of like, what a jerk kind of thing. Like, he's a player that you love to hate. You know what I mean? Like, if he's an opposition player. But if it comes down to he signs for Montreal and Hamilton's the last one left, I kind of want to see him hit for the cycle. I'd like to see him here just to be like, man, he got to all 9 just like Kevin Glenn. But it's like Kevin Glenn didn't get to his 7th team, which I think was BC, until 2014, and he was like 35 years old. Sean Lemon's 29. It feels like Sean Lemon has been around for a decade, but he's only 29. He's already hit 7 teams. I don't know if that's a really good look for Mr. Lemon. Like, it kind of tells me that maybe there's some personality issues with the guy.
Yeah, and I didn't even realize that he played for that many teams. But, he's only 29, but I'd reckon to say that defensive linemen usually retire a lot earlier than quarterbacks. So the clock's starting to tick on him, I think, if he wants to make it to 9 teams. I'm sure that's not in his
That's probably not what he wants to do.
Yeah, but, he was one of the stars on the Argonauts, one of their bigger stars, and it doesn't seem to matter in Toronto, but I wasn't as surprised as the Bauman trade, but I was still, taken aback by it quite a bit.
All right, let's move on to our last bit of CFL news this week, Mike. And did you see Vernon Adams' comments about the crowd chanting for Johnny Manziel in last week's game?
I did. He was upset about it. We talked about it before the show. Everyone wants players to say more than the cliche stuff, how they're trained to talk to the media. But this is why they say those things. Because if they, say something that they really feel, then the media jumps all over them. So maybe he should have been a little smarter. Maybe he shouldn't have went after the fans so hard, because he's going to be not very well liked now in Montreal. But he was just being honest. He was speaking from the heart. He was disrespected. He was playing okay. I thought he played good earlier on in the game, and then he went through a stretch where he was like 3 of 11 passing the ball, and the offense wasn't moving that well. The fans had a right to be upset, but you shouldn't go after the fans. That's my only issue with it.
Okay, so here's what he said. He said, yes, it hurt me to hear that. I have nothing more to say or to give to the supporters of Montreal. Never again. Their behavior was very disrespectful. It was not like I was playing badly. I do not.
How's he supposed to play for this team? Like, when you say that. Sorry.
Don't interrupt me, goddammit! No, I'm kidding. I agree. I agree that could be an issue. Let me continue with what he said.
Yeah.
I do not want them to ask me for anything, not even a small piece of equipment. I do not care what the situation is. It was a lack of respect, and it affected me. I tried anyways to make plays in the field, but that's fine. In the future, I'll treat the fans as they treated me. That's all. He did come out later and apologize to the fans for his comments, maybe it's the right move. Maybe it's not. I don't know. But here's what I kind of take issue with. I saw a lot of people call him out for this and call him mentally weak, and he needs to toughen up, and he needs to grow up. And you touched on it a little bit earlier. We crush athletes when they give the same canned, well, it's just another game, the Bill Belichick answer, we're on to Cleveland, we're gonna focus on the next game, we're gonna do our job, we're gonna try to win, like the same boring ass quotes that we always get. We kill guys for that, and then when someone shows the tiniest modicum of personality or bears his feelings, he gets crushed for that too. Like, there's no winning. And I will say, yes, Vernon Adams didn't have a great game, but the Alouettes missed, 3 field goals in that game. He threw a beautiful pass to one of the wide receivers, and it dropped right through their hands. They lost that game by less than 20. The Eskimos won that game fairly handily, but you add all those things up, and that's a close ball game. And all of a sudden, Vernon Adams doesn't look like he's playing so poorly. There was a segment of that fan base that was going to – I heard guys in Hamilton on Saturday screaming, "We want Johnny." He's gone, and they're still chanting it in Hamilton. In Montreal, I think the reason this happened, that fans were chanting for his name, is because Mike Sherman, the dumbass that he is, came out and said Johnny Manziel's going to play in this game. And yes, hindsight's 20/20, and we can all sit here and go, there's no way he should have played. That never – like it wouldn't have worked. He was only there a couple of days, blah, blah, blah.
Then don't say he's going to play, you know?
Thank you. Don't say, yes. You have riled up a fan base that has been waiting for a superstar quarterback. Whether Johnny Manziel can be there or not is still yet to be determined. But what he is he's a name value guy, Heisman Trophy winner. People know who Johnny Manziel is. You rile up that fan base that has been waiting 5 years to find a quarterback to take over for Anthony Calvillo, and you tell them that he's going to see the field, and then the offense starts to bog down, of course they're going to turn on the starting quarterback. Of course they're going to chant for the backup. I don't put the – like, there, it was only a small handful of fans, and those fans are morons, quite frankly, for even believing the coach. But Mike Sherman just should have kept his mouth shut and not said a thing.
Yeah, I mean, they're, you know, the team is culpable in this as well. They, you know, they tweeted out, you know, Johnny's going to play, blah, blah, blah. They're selling the fact that Johnny Manziel is going to get on the field at some point, and you just can't do that. You're trolling the fans, and those people that showed up, you know, they probably aren't real CFL fans. They probably don't give a crap about the Alouettes. They probably just bought their Johnny Manziel jersey and were sitting there waiting for their hero to come out and play. But, yeah, you just cannot say he's going to play and then don't play him. That's a troll job by Mike Sherman as well.
Yeah, so he would be a great candidate for our bozo this week. But instead, we have another guy who probably should have kept his mouth shut. That's our bozo this week. So, Mike, why don't you take it away?
I forget who it was.
Kyrie Saint Bear! It was Kyrie Saint Bear! All right, I will steal this from you then. I will give him another bozo this week for his stupid, childish, just lame comments about the city of Hamilton, about Jeremiah Mazzoli, about Simone Lawrence. Said the city smells, said he hates Mazzoli and Simone Lawrence, said that the Ticats jerseys are ugly. Like, this isn't even good trash talk. Like, that's why he's a bozo. I'm all for trash talk. There was a Red Blacks fan who came up. I thought it was pretty inventive. It was meant as a jab. It was meant as fun. Some people took it too seriously. I laughed at it. It was a list of if every team was named like the Tiger Cats, because Tiger Cats is kind of redundant, and we understand that. We know here why that's the name. Mm-hmm. And she was just doing a job of like needling fans because we were playing each other, and I dig the friendly rivalries, and I like stuff like that, and I think it's fun. That was way more inventive and way more interesting than anything Kyrie Saint Bear said. Kyrie Saint, like, that's just the city smells and the jerseys are ugly. Like, what are you, five? Like, my 8-year-old nephew can flip better than that. And you're just off, just completely awful stuff.
Yeah, you know, I like trash talk as well. I like when teams trash talk before games. It builds it up. You get more excited to see this game. You know, these teams really don't like each other, but those jabs at the city and
lame.
You know, very lame. I mean, Jeremiah Mazzoli said, you know, he's never even talked to the damn guy. How do you not like me? And, you know, he said Simone Lawrence is overrated and all this stuff. And listen, you're an idiot. You're a bozo.
Mike, you know what? He might be the first slapdick bozo chode. He deserves all three.
Yeah, give him all three.
Hall of Famer. Bozo Hall of Famer.
Yes, it's got to be, because this guy, I mean, you're a dirty player. You have been all your career. I mean, what are you talking about? This city's stinky, smelly. I mean, come on, man. Every city's stinky, smelly.
Lame.
Yeah.
It's awful. Just come on. Come on, Kyrie. If you want to talk some talk better than that. That was lame stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, enough of that, bozo. Let's move on. We've gone pretty long this week. Lots to talk about, obviously. Let's talk Ticats game preview. Let's talk this week's upcoming game. Kind of a big one on Friday. Our Ticats hit the road to take on the 1-5 Montreal Alouettes in a game where as crazy as this sounds, the winner will sit in second place in the East. So Johnny Manziel is going to start this game. So that's a storyline that we're going to have to deal with. You and I probably touch on it in a couple minutes anyway. So, Mike, let's get to the meat and potatoes of this all. Let's stop with the preamble. Tell everyone why you think the Ticats are going to lose. Yes, lose to the Montreal Alouettes on Friday night.
Well, let's hopefully they don't, because I'm going to tear my hair out if they lose this game. They cannot lose this game, all right? They can't. But here's why they're going to. Johnny Football. You know, I know he's had a short time in this offense, but he's going to be – he's already motivated, obviously. This is the comeback season. But he's gonna show the Ticats why they shouldn't have let him go. Johnny Football is probably going to have a big game. The second reason, Ticats are allergic to the damn end zone. They cannot score touchdowns. So if you can't put up points, if you're just putting up threes every time, it's going to be tough to win. And they're, you know, the lack of run game. I think they're not going to learn their lessons. And they're just going to try to be a pass-happy offense again. So there's three reasons why the Ticats will lose, even though, obviously, I hope they don't.
Okay, so here's three reasons why I think they're going to win. First one, Johnny Football. Dude, if his name wasn't Johnny Manziel, we would not be making a big deal out of him starting this game. The Argos, our rival down the QEW, also sitting at 1-5, they're making a quarterback change this week. What's his name? McLeod Bethel Thompson is going to start for them in place of James Franklin. James Franklin was a big offseason acquisition. No one's really making a big stink out of that. Johnny Manziel will have, by the time this game comes around, 4 or 5 practices with Montreal. We have no idea what he's going to be. So until we see that Johnny Manziel can be the Texas A&M Johnny Manziel, I'm not concerned with him whatsoever. Secondly, oh, what a rush, Mike. These Ticats, especially under June Jones, they've been road warriors. Like what I did there? Of course you did.
Mm-hmm.
5-3 on the road under June Jones. That's pretty – they're like, I don't know, 2-6 at home. Like, their road record is ridiculously good compared to their home record, which makes absolutely no sense. The Ticats also haven't lost in Montreal since 2015. They've won 3 in a row against the Owls at Molson Stadium, and this came after an 18-game losing streak between 2002 and 2015 at Montreal in the regular season. The asterisk there, of course, is they did go into Olympic Stadium in the 2011 East Semi and beat the Alouettes in Montreal, but 18 regular season game losing streak that spanned over a decade where the Ticats wouldn't win in Montreal. They seem to now just go into Montreal and win, and so that's another reason why I think they're going to win this one. And last but definitely not least, the Owls just aren't very good, and you and I have talked about how we think the Ticats aren't that great right now, but the Owls are so much worse, and I have the stats to back it up. The CFL, they send out the stats package, which I know you get. They track 56 different offensive and defensive categories. Of those 56, the Alouettes sit last or second to last in 40 of them. Hamilton, by contrast, is last or second to last in just 7. There is essentially no metric that says the Alouettes, even though they're a game behind the Ticats, are anywhere near as good as Hamilton. If they are able to march the field like they've done on every other team, they're probably going to be able to find the end zone on this because Montreal's not very good. And if this defense is able to stifle them like they have most teams this year, this game won't be close. And I know we said that against the Riders because the Riders didn't look good. The Riders lost to this Alouettes team. But the Riders last year were a 10-win team that got to the East Final, so it's not like they were a fly-by-night Johnny-come-lately. Montreal is just really, really bad, and I just can't see any reason why the Ticats won't win this football game. I honestly can't.
Well, yeah, I didn't see any reasons why they'd lose the 2 games against the Riders either, and they
or
did.
Or the one against our – I agree with you.
Yeah, but yeah, you look at it like compare the offenses. Total yards per game, 413.8 for the Ticats, 292 for the Alouettes. Passing yards per game, 319 for the Ticats, 223.2 for the Alouettes. Rushing yards per game, 94.8 for the Ticats, 68.8 for the Alouettes. I mean, everything, this team is better than the Alouettes. But once you get on the field, anything can happen. So I agree. I mean, I said, you know, the reasons why they'll lose, but I don't necessarily actually think they're going to lose. But, you know, if you look at the stats, you look at everything, Ticats should win this game. And quite easily. Like, that's what should happen. What actually will happen, I don't know.
If they lose this game, we just might do an entire hour of us just screaming obscenities into the microphone. Like, yes, we thought they'd beat the Rough Riders. Yes, we thought they'd beat the Red Blacks. And I was fairly confident in getting wins there. If they lose to Montreal, Mike, I don't have any hair to pull out, so I can't pull my hair out. But I we're going to need the bleep button next week a big time.
Yeah, I mean, you just can't – you cannot lose to the Montreal Alouettes. It's just if you know, the perception is Hamilton's a better team, if that's the perception, then that's what should happen on the field. And, I just don't want to be 2-5 as well. This team, once again, is off to a slow start. And we're – you know, it's not really that early anymore. We're getting close to Labor Day. We have to start winning
games. A third of the season is over.
Yes. So, you know, if you take the games – you chop up the seasons into six games, you know, we're done with that. So now let's, you know, we're 2-4, which isn't great, but there's still lots of time left. Let's start winning this week against a team that we should beat.
I agree. So that was Podski Wee Wee for this week. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.